Okay, so today we're going to walk through, continue walking through the MicroPython stuff. We'll actually get to write some code, make some lights blink up, hopefully. I just posted a few minutes ago some pictures to the class Flickr of the heart-shaped herb with laid against a quarter and against a ruler, so you can get some idea of the scale of that guy. Of course, once we have the lab set up and you guys can practice on the track, it'll be available for your practice too. But if you wanted to start thinking about that, you can check the class Flickr album. It has, I think, 3 or 4 pictures of the heart-shaped herb. So before we get started on the MicroPython stuff, any questions about what you have due on Friday? Yes?
Can we use the sketches that we drew out by hand as far as our pictures? Or do we have to...
So all drawings in this class and professional engineering work need to be computer generated.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes?
Do we need figures for our proposed design as well as the design we dissected?
So the question was, if you're proposing changes, should you have drawings for those? What do you guys think? I see some nods, yeah. Right, it's going to be really hard for your reader to understand the changes you're proposing, if they're of any significance at all, without a figure to support them.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And just like all the figures in this class, it doesn't have to be that complicated, but it has to be enough to convey the functionality. All right, so as a reminder, they don't have to be full CAD drawings. They don't have to be super fancy.
Just
kind of a reminder, right? But they do have to be kind of good enough to convey the functionality of what you're trying to explain. Other questions? Okay, so we're going to spend the first few minutes reviewing what we talked about last week. Hopefully at least some of you looked through those notes after class. The better you know that basic stuff, the easier everything else is going to come for you, right? And that's why I asked you guys to kind of put away your laptops last week to make sure we get that understood. So, comments? I think hopefully I've convinced you of the importance of comments, but pretty much everyone has to learn it on their own, I think. How do we make a block comment in Python? 3 quotation marks, right? So if you open with 3 double quotes, right, it will be a comment until you have another 3 double quotes to close it. Okay. How do we do inline commenting in Python?
Hashtag or pound symbol.
Hashtag, pound symbol, that's right. So you can have a single line comment. And those single line comments can actually come also in line with the code. So you can have code, and then after that line on the code, have your comment start. That's a common way to do it. We'll see. Okay. If I want to print some stuff out in Python, how do I do that? I think I heard it.
Print.
Print, yes. So let's look at printing just a string, the easiest thing to print. We saw just a print statement, you need the parentheses. A string is everything inside those 2 quotation marks. So we'll print exactly hello, what you put in there. Okay. So that's kind of the simplest thing to do. It's the first thing we'll do today, actually. If I wanted to print an integer, say I define x, right? I'm saying x is equal to 10. If I want to print out the integer, how do I do that? So the simplest way, sure, is just to print out x. Right? When this prints out, all it's going to print is 10. It doesn't tell you where that 10 came from in your code. Right? So if you're doing this in a lot of places, it's going to be hard to follow which number corresponds to which variable. Okay, so we can format that and make it easier for us to parse when we're debugging our code. Right? You remember how to do that? I guess that's a no. That's where those curly bracket things come in, right? So colon D is actually will format an integer. Right? So now you can have your string, and then inside the string, what this is basically dot format is saying is inside these curly brackets, plug in the variable in that format string. And based on kind of the style I'm proposing, which here is just colon D for integer. Okay. You can try to leave this blank. Python does a pretty good job of it. If you left this blank, it would try to figure out what kind of variable this was and print it out. Okay. But this allows you to say, you have a bunch of variables printing out, you can print out exactly which one each one is, right? So you know where it's at what it's actually representing. You guys want to do me a favor? Close your laptops for night now. Okay. If I want to print out that integer and show a plus or minus sign always, all I have to do is add the plus sign. There's a link in notes from last week that explains all these things, right? And if you just look up Python string formatting, because you want to get fancy in your formatting, you could do that, right? If I wanted to print out a float, I just do a colon F for float, right? And it's going to print out all the decimal places. What's the difference between an integer and a float? Yeah, float has decimal places, basically. An integer is an integer, like it sounds. Okay. And I can do fancier things with floats, too. So if I want to only print four decimal places, I can do a .4f if I wanted. Okay. That, again, makes your kind of printout look nicer. Can be easier to debug what's happening or monitor your process. Okay? What's the syntax for an if statement in Python? If something, yeah. Well, we have some condition we have to check, right? So we can have a, whatever's in those parentheses has to evaluate to a Boolean, right? Has to evaluate to a true or false. Right, so we have all these comparison operators that we talked about. Equal compares equality. Okay, so in this case, we're saying condition one is true. Everything that's indented underneath that if statement will run. Right, you do need a colon at the end. Okay, if I wanted some kind of else if type thing, what do? Right. So then I can have elif, so it's actually no else parts, so it's elif, save you two keystrokes. And then whatever condition you want to check, if the first one's not true, then I check this one. Okay. And then if that one is true, I run whatever's in the block underneath, indented. Okay. How many of those can I have? As many as I want. Am I required to have an elif? No. I can also have an else, so if all the ones above are false, then the else runs, everything indented underneath the else. Okay. Do I need the else? No. So all I really need for an if is the if. Okay. So I can have an if, I can have an elif with if and an elif without an else. I can have just an if and an else. Right, but I have to have at least the if I'm doing this kind of thing. I can't have an elif first. That doesn't make any sense. Okay. This is a common one. You'll use this a lot, checking sensors, checking operation in your code. So I'll just make sure you kind of get a grasp on the syntax. Right. So what's the syntax for a for loop? For something, yeah? Yeah, so basically some kind of counter or some kind of sequence, right? And it ends in a colon, okay? So you have a counter and some kind of sequence. And then what runs in that for loop is everything that's indented underneath the for. Okay, remember the white space matters in Python. Okay, so this is a pretty common construct for the for loop. So I want to do something 10 times. This is a really common way to do it. Okay, so that range basically says, oh, do it 10 times. Okay, it's a for loop. What about a while loop? What's the kind of syntax for a while loop? Yep, while. It's some kind of condition check, colon, and then what runs if that condition is true is everything that's indented underneath the while loop. Okay, and it does have to be all the, if you want all this stuff to run, it has to be the same indentation. Okay. And as a reminder, on the while loop, that condition is checked at the beginning of the loop. So if it's true the first time, it runs the loop. It's down to the bottom of whatever it's indented, goes back up to the top and checks the condition again. If it's still true, it keeps running. Okay? Let's do a little review of functions. What does that def keyword do for us? Yeah, it basically says, hey, this thing is a function. Okay? So we've got a function name. As a reminder, I think it's good practice to have some meaningful name for your functions. Like, kind of explain what they're actually doing. A little phrase is helpful. And then we're going to have two input variables. In this case, we have repeat and phrase. Okay? Then what we're going to do is use a for loop for counter and range, repeat, right? And then we're going to print the phase. Okay, so what is this function going to do? It's going to repeatedly print phrase as like exactly phrase or something. Remember, those are input variables. Right, so I can pass it whatever I want as a phrase. Right, I can pass it whatever I want as repeat. Right, so let's look at how to do that. So a couple points on this before we move on. Nothing's actually returned from this function. The one we saw last week had a return statement. Right, so this function does stuff, but doesn't give any numbers back to whoever called it. And that's actually going to be pretty common for you, too. You're going to run a motor. There's no answer being sent back to whoever told that motor to run, generally. Okay. So function, you don't have to have that return statement, but you can. And then make sure, again, right, everything that's indented over underneath def is part of that function. Right. So we have an indentation for def and an indentation for what goes in the for loop. Okay. So let's look at this function. So there's the function again. Let's assign some values. Let's say we want the number of repeats to be 3. And then we're going to have some kind of string we want to print, text to print. Then I can call that function like this. What's going to happen? And it's going to print hello 3 times. Why? What's that? That's what we're telling it to do? Okay, sure. I'll buy that. Okay, so let's look at what we're passing into the function, right? So we have num repeats. When we call the function, it gets passed into that repeat variable. Okay? The text to print, right, is in the phase kind of position. It gets passed into phrase, right? So inside the function, up there, repeat equals number of repeats, right? Phrase equals text to print. Text to print is hello. So we have for counter in range repeat. Well, number of repeats points here. That points back to 3. Right. So we have counter in range 3. It's going to loop 3 times. Okay. And then we're going to print phrase. Well, we pass text to print into phrase. So text to print gets all the way passed all the way through. Okay. So yeah, it's going to print hello 3 times. In this example, what is the scope of the variable phrase? Yeah. So phrase is only available inside that function, how we have it written here. Right. So remember, variable scope is where the variable can be read and written to. Okay. So if you tried to do something with phrase out here, it's going to say, hey, that variable actually doesn't exist. If you tried to print it out or do something else with it. Okay? Because it's only defined up in that function, the way we have it written right here. Okay? It's a very important concept, variable scope. And it extends out to other topics once you get to more advanced stuff. Okay? Questions about that? That kind of makes sure we got that understanding. The foundational built. Foundation built. You guys all follow this.
So
I see faces that suggest no. Yeah. So I got to assign that. So remember our function definition, right? The white space matters. So as soon as we come back over to this left-hand side, we're not inside that function anymore, right? So we define the function. It has to be defined before we want to do anything with it. So it's defined. We come back to this left-hand side, and we have two variables that we've assigned ourselves, right? Yes. Okay, so that's the question. Well, how's this working? So I think that's a good exercise. If you write some code and you can't figure out why is it not working, this is going to be the same way you should go through this. You go through it line by line, right? So the first part, let's kind of hold off on looking at the first part. Let's start here because we'll define the function, but this is the first thing that actually kind of gets executed, if you will, right? So we've saved the number 3 and number repeats. We've saved this string hello into text to print. Okay. Once we get those two things, we come down and we call this function. And what we do is pass those two variables, right? Just like a function of x in whatever class you got, right? You're passing information to it. These are the inputs to that function. So we pass number of repeats, and text to print. Okay. In those two positions, you line those up with the function you're calling, right? So num repeats, kind of the 3 gets kind of passed through to repeat up there when it gets called. Text to print gets kind of passed through to phrase. So text to print is saved in phrase while it's inside that function, once we've passed that information. Okay, we come down to the for loop now. Right. So how does this for loop work? Somebody help us out. What does it check to begin with? Right, so the range gives you a certain number of values, right? So for loop says, hey, this is what I'm incrementing over have any values left, right? Well, our range object has repeat values left, number of values left the first time we call it. Well, repeat is actually, number repeats got passed through, so here repeat is 3. Okay, so the first time through we have 3 objects left. So, yes, we should do the stuff that's inside this for loop. Okay. Well, what's inside the for loop is print phrase. Well, what is that phrase here? Well, it's just a variable holding whatever I pass to it in this position of the function call, okay. Which in our case was hello. Okay. Prints that out, goes back to the beginning of that for loop. Do I still have items left in my object there? Yeah, I have 2 more. Okay, so yes, I want to run the for loop. I come down. Well, I print phrase. The phrase is still the same. I print it. Go back to the top. Okay, well, I have 1 thing left in my range of 3. I print it. Okay, now my for loop's done. The function's completely done. We're done. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's talk about how we're going to connect to our REPL. We talked briefly about the REPL. We're going to have to use the serial terminal. So that's that cool term application that you downloaded, hopefully. All right, serial settings are these. And I'll do this live in just a second, but let's look through it first. In Windows, if you open Options on the main toolbar, you're going to window that looks something like this in cool term. In addition to changing the settings, you're going to have to pick out that port to match whatever your computer has assigned to your Pi board when you plugged it in. Right? There's actually a video on our website about how to figure that out if you haven't done so already. CoolTerm actually does a pretty good job of scanning the available ones, so you'll probably have 2, maybe 3 there, so you can trial and error if you only got 3. Probably just as fast. All right. When you connect, so say those options, and then you click the connect button, and then you'll get to a prompt something like this. Yours will probably say MicroPython V1.9 something, not 1.8, but will look something like this. And then from this, right, what these three greater than signs, that's called your prompt. Right? So from there, we can just start typing Python stuff. Okay. On the Mac, the settings option screen looks a little bit different, but same idea. On a Mac or Linux machine, this is going to be like, instead of being COM some number, it's going to be USB modem something or another, some other random string. Okay. And that's going to probably have to change based on your particular computer. Okay, but again, it's pretty good. Down at the bottom here, if you don't see it, you can scan and it should show up and you can pick it. Right? And then you'll have to change the settings in the guy as well. Okay. And then from there, it's basically the same. Right? You push connect and that should show up. Then we can start typing Python commands. Okay. So let me do that real quick. We can walk through it and then you guys can walk through it. So just take your micro USB cable. You plug into your Pi board. Plug in there. So if you open CoolTerm, okay, you can go to options. So from that pull down, actually have, it's going to be on a Mac, it's going to be USB modem something. On a Windows machine, it'll be COM 1 or probably COM 3 or 5, typically. So you can pick that. The baud rate, 115.200. Everything else should be stock. Okay. I would also recommend that you go over on both the Mac or Windows, go over to Terminal tab in your settings as well. Okay? And I want to go down and check. I want to check filter escape sequences and handle backspace and delete characters. Whoops, not that one. That one. So I want to have all three of those checked. It's just going to make the experience of typing into that terminal a lot better. Should have those settings in Windows as well. So it's in terminal. So your serial port, we changed all those to match. If you go to terminal, you should have three check marks. It looks, three boxes look something like that. Filter ASCII escape, convert non-printable characters, handle backspace and delete characters. That's from options. So we can do options. Serial port, you have to pick your port number there. That port number is not going to show up for your Pi board unless your Pi board is actually plugged in. Okay. Then I would go over to terminal and check these first three boxes. Right, it will work without those boxes checked. It'll just be a bit of a pain to type stuff in. Okay. Once you click OK there, you can go over to the connect button. Click connect, and you see it should get to a MicroPython prompt. Okay. Sure. So let's walk through this one more time. You might want a heads up real quick. Let's walk through it all together, and then I'll bounce around and help you guys out. Okay. So follow me through. This looks exactly the same in Windows while we're using CoolTerm. So you go to options. So in serial port, you have to pick this to be whatever port you want to attach to. Again, make sure your Pi board is plugged in. Select the right one. This needs to be baud rate, 115.200. Everything else will be the same. Okay, 115.200. In terminal, it's these top three check marks are in the same place in Windows, at least as of a week ago. First one, if it's not there, don't worry about it for now. Yeah. Okay. And then once you have those options set, you can click the connect button and connect. And you should get to something like this, basically. Okay, so I think the majority of us are connected. If you're not, I'll bounce around and help you out, but let's get everybody else moving forward. Okay, so from here, we can type all kinds of Python commands. So 2 plus 2, right? Oops. We can type out print commands and get print stuff out, right? We can do those formatted prints. I get a formatted print. Okay. All right. So let's bounce back over and look at what we're going to do. Okay. So we can do all kinds of Python line by line from that way. So it's a good way if you're kind of learning functions, that kind of thing, to get rolling. Or debugging things works pretty well. Okay. There are a few special commands in the REPL. If you're connected to the board, there are a few special things we can do. The first one is if you're connected and you hit Control D, it will reboot the Pi board. Okay. It's like restarting it, but not having to, that, it stays connected. You don't have to eject it, anything like that. It's a soft reboot. So I can hit Control D, and you show even tell you, hey, I did a soft reboot. Okay. So you can try that if you're connected. Control D, and it basically is just going to start over. We also can hit Control E. We'll enter a paste mode, right? So because white space is important in Python, it's kind of sensitive to how you paste things in, right? So the Control E will attempt to back out what spacing you intended, right? It's not going to be great still at pasting big, huge blocks of code, right? It's 4, 3, 4, 5 lines, so you don't have to type them. But like a big, huge function, it's still not going to do very well at that, okay? So if you go into hit Control E, you'll get these. So your greater than signs will turn into equal signs and let you know you're in paste mode. Okay, and then paste whatever you want, either your right click or Command or Control V for paste shortcut. And then Control D, if you're inside paste mode, Control D will exit the paste mode for you and run whatever code you pasted in. Okay, so let me do that for you real quick. I will copy that. Okay, so Control E. You see it changed. It tells you, hey, I'm in paste mode, right? I can do Control C to cancel or Control D to finish pasting. So I'll paste in something and then Control D to finish. And as soon as I Control D on the, out of that paste mode, it's going to run whatever I pasted in. Okay. So with those, I think we have all the pieces in place for kind of the recommended way I'm going to recommend a workflow I'm going to recommend to you. Get that out. Okay. So we talked about, we've connected, right? We started the REPL. Once you connect, I will just have the REPL open for the most part, particularly while you're developing things, right? We talked about working on the scripts, which we're going to talk about more moving forward. Working on them in a local folder, right? So don't work directly on that flash drive that's your Pi board. Okay, you're asking for trouble if you're doing that. Okay, so work on a local folder. My local folder of Python stuff. Show it to you. Looks like this. Right. So while all of these will have the main and boot inside, I've named the folder according to what it does. And if I want to work on any of these scripts, all these are available on our GitHub, by the way. If I wanted to work on this, I work on the local copy, right? This is on my hard drive. Okay. And then what I would do is take, once I'm done working with this main file on my local machine, just take and drag it over and drop it on the flash drive. Okay. Just like you're copying to a USB stick or whatever. Okay. So work on it locally, drag the edited versions over to your pi board flash, and then in the REPL hit control D. Okay? And because you dropped a new main script on there, when you hit control D, it's going to run that new script now, the updated script. Okay? So let's look at an example. For example, I can take this one, I'm an atom. You should be able to drag actually directly. So. A little bit. So I take main that I was adding an atom, drag it to the flash. Yes, I want to replace it. I can go back over to my REPL. Control D. And that script, which we'll see in a second, will turn the LED on. Okay. So we'll talk about that script in a second, but basically edit locally, drag to the flash, soft restart. That's going to be my recommended workflow while you're developing. Okay. You don't have to eject and unplug and hard restart all the time. Okay, this is going to be a lot faster for you, and in some ways safer in terms of your memory. Right. Okay. You guys with me on that so far? Edit locally, drag to the flash, and then within that REPL, do a soft restart. Control D. Right. Okay. We have those two, at minimum two files. On the Pi board, we have boot.py, Python file boot. That's going to run immediately every time it boots up. So when you hit Control D, that's the first file it looks at. Okay, that's why it's called boot. It runs at boot up, at startup. Okay, and basically you want to use that, or it does get used for setup and configuration for the most part. Main is what you'll basically be editing for the most part in this class. Right? As soon as boot finishes whatever it's doing, then main gets run. Called main because it holds your main code, and it can reference, as we'll see today, can reference other Python files as well. Okay. But the main core part of your code belongs in main. Okay. What belongs in boot? Right. So for the most part, you guys don't have to touch boot ever. And in fact, what you see here is what's required to be in boot. Okay. Nothing is actually required to be in that file. Okay. What's most common is something like this, where you might import core libraries that are going to use as part of your script that you only need to do kind of at boot up time. Okay. But for the most part, you guys don't need to touch that boot file at all. Okay. We'll see that these import statements allow us to use the code from other modules or libraries. So in this case, we're importing a library or module named machine. So we have those functions, somebody else wrote them, but we're able to use them. Okay. We'll do that one a lot. We'll do PYB is for kind of special Pi board functions. Right. That's one we'll almost always be importing in here. Okay. Basically, if you want to use either one of those imports, you have to kind of prepend whatever function you want to call as part of that library with the library name and a period. Okay. So what we're showing here is that this LED function is part of that PYB library. So I need PYB dot and then whatever function I want to use that's part of that library. Okay, follow me on that. And that one comes up a lot. There'll be PYB dots all over the place in our code. Okay, we're going to rely heavily on that library. Okay. Another one we'll use quite a bit is this time library, which as its name suggests, handles timing. Okay. We'll be using probably mostly these first two, I would guess, for the time scale where we work at for the most part. So time has these three functions. Sleep. Sleep by itself will take a number of seconds to sleep. So if you wanted to use the sleep function of the time library, you need time, period, sleep. Okay. There's another function called sleep milliseconds, underscore mass. Right? So the number you pass to that is in milliseconds. So it's still part of the time library. We need time, dot, sleep milliseconds and a number. Or sleep microseconds, similarly. Okay. So if you want to get at the functions or data inside another file, another library, it's that file name, period, and then whatever you want to use from there. Okay. We got that. Yes? Yes.
Okay, so like, would it be easier as we
Yeah, so I think I wouldn't expect you guys to remember right now, right? You will remember this eventually because you're going to use it a bunch. You'll remember that eventually, use it a bunch. But remember, like I said, professional programmers don't remember every function name and every piece of syntax, right? That's why I highly recommend to have that documentation bookmarked and open, usually, while I'm writing code. I write code that way. You can save those Python files you're working on wherever you want. I would just recommend you have some name describing. So if you look at my...
So we can have like a Python folder and different folders in there?
Yep. So you look at mine, for example. So this folder on my computer is everything that's in that GitHub repository that you guys have access to. In there, I have a folder called MicroPython. And in that MicroPython, a bunch of different Python scripts. Inside each one of these is a boot and a main.
So we're going to save it through Atom?
Yes. We're getting there. Yeah, no. But this structure on your local computer is completely up to you. Mm-hmm. Right? I would recommend, however, have some kind of short description of what the files in that folder are doing, because they're all going to be named boot and main because they're going on the Pi board. Mm-hmm. Right? So the name, file name alone for those doesn't tell you anything. Okay, so let's write some code. Okay, should have a, hopefully, if you haven't done it already, take the boot and main that are on your Pi board and copy them somewhere locally. Right, so you see I actually have those copied somewhere here. Pi board default something, default files. Right, so there's my backup copy of those files. Okay, so you can do that. You can make a copy of that main somewhere and open it up. And it will be blank, basically. And then what we want to type in, so you can ignore the comment block for now. You want to type in import space pyb in Atom. Okay. You want to return down. Let me make this a little bigger. Okay, so what we want, you see I'm in main, right? The file's highlighted, import pyb, and then pyb period, LED, all caps, open parentheses, one, close parentheses, dot on parentheses. Okay, so type it exactly as you see here. Capitalization matters. And save that somewhere, wherever you want, as main.py. Somewhere locally. Okay, so this is that file editor I suggested to you guys called Atom. So I've opened Atom, that text editor. And you can create a file or you could work from a copy of the one that's on the Pi board. Don't work directly on the board. So you can drag those files off somewhere locally. Right? And then write this file, or you can write this file from scratch and just save it as main py somewhere. Okay. But you want a main py that looks like this. Don't have to worry about that top part for right now. Okay, so you want from everything from kind of import pyb down inside a text file called main.py. Okay. Looks like folks, I'll pull this back up in a second, but it looks like a good number of folks have it typed. So once you do that, here's my folder that has that main we were just working on. All right. I can take and drag that over to the flash drive. It's going to say, probably, hey, you already have a main there. Let me replace it. Okay, so I've copied that main we just wrote over to the Pi board. Then you can bounce to your REPL and hit Control D, and it will run, and it should do this. Should see the red LED come on. So I'll bounce back to what you need to type. Once you have this saved somewhere, drag it to your flash. Go to the REPL and hit Control D. So for these, so the question was, does the spacing matter around these periods? Yes. So no spacing around these periods here. Okay, who has a LED on? Once you have this written, typed into main.py, save somewhere on your computer. Take it, drag it from your computer onto PYB Flash. Yes, I want to replace it. Okay, go over to your REPL. Install Freestart is Control D. And you should get a red LED. Who has red LEDs? Hold them up. That one. Am I over here? That file, which you drop it on the Pi board, if you want it to be the main file to run, it has to be named main.py. Okay, we got a good number of LEDs. So inside this main function, if we change this last part to off, what do you think happens? It's going to turn it off. Right, so I could take that, drag it over, restart, and it would turn the LED off. Right. So we did that. Okay. Let's look at a slightly only more complex version. Okay. I'm going to put it all up, and then we'll talk through it. And then I'll leave it up for you guys to write in your main.py and take care of. Okay. So what we're going to do now, maybe in a separate folder, so you can have the old version, the code you ran first, is type out this stuff. Really, the only difference is instead of typing this stuff out every time, I know that's going to be the red LED. Right. Heads up this way, guys. Okay. So instead of typing this out every time, I can save this part of that command effectively in a variable that I know is going to be the red LED. Right? I know LED 1 on the Pi board is red. So I gave it a descriptive name, called it that. Right? And then if I want to turn it on, I can just do red LED.on. Right? So I know it's easy to read what's happening there. The red LED is going to turn on. So we'll do this pretty commonly as well, right? Where we might have some kind of long string of things that actually is a motor. We'll redefine it. Basically, what happens is all that long code of stuff gets saved into that variable that's motor or whatever, in this case, red LED. Right? So I can type in the future red LED and have some better idea what that actually is corresponding to. Right? In this case, we've added a time function, and we're sleeping for 5 seconds. Okay. And then we're going to turn the LED off. Right? Okay? So I'll back up to that. And I think that's it. You can change, if you have the red LED the first time, you can change main to be this. Drag it on your board, and you should see it come on for 5 seconds. And then go off. Right. So same operation. Change, write a file locally called main.py that has this in it. Once you save that locally as main.py, drag it to PYB Flash, bounce over to the REPL, do a soft restart by Control D. Alright, so give that a shot. Who's got this one working? Good number, folks. Okay, good. So, those of you that don't have it working, we can do this in a better way, right? Let's do that 5 times. Right? So, all the beginning part does that. So, if we wanted to turn the LED on and off 5 times, right? We said, well, a for loop's a good way to do that. Do something a certain number of times, right? So, we can write a for loop that inside it just has those functions, right? So, inside this for loop, it'll turn on once, go to sleep for 2 seconds, turn off, sleep for 2 seconds, and do that 5 times. Okay. So if you didn't get the one before this setup, you can skip straight to this one if you want. And really all that adds is the for loop around the turning on and off. Okay, I want to make sure we get through a few other things. This code is up already. I think it's worthwhile. Heads up, guys. Worthwhile. If you didn't get it working in class today, go off and try to get it working as homework effectively. Spend a little time with it. One sec. Spend a little time with it. Let's keep marching along. I got a question. Yes. Okay. One second. Okay. So another way we could do that, LEDs also have a function called toggle. So instead of doing on and off, you can toggle. Right? So if it's on, it'll go off. If it's off, it'll turn on. Right? So just kind of showing that because there are a lot of different ways to write the code that does the same stuff effectively. Okay. Remember, I think I would bookmark all this stuff. Have it open. Don't feel like you have to remember every piece of syntax. Okay. Look it up. It's there for you. Okay. In the REPL, right, there's a few ways we can get to help in the REPL itself. Right, there's some help kind of embedded in the system. Okay. So we can just type help parentheses in the REPL. So if we do that, you'll get a nice overview of the main functionality of the Pi board, some I/O information, special commands, all right there in the REPL for you even. Okay. Another way we can get help inside the REPL, and why one reason it's convenient to leave open, is we'll also do tab completion for you. Right? It's pretty common in most code editors to be able to do this. So, for example, inside the REPL, if I wanted to, let's say, so I've imported the PyBoard module by import PYB. If I want to know what's inside that module, so I can do PYB period, and then hit tab, and it's going to show me all the stuff that's available as part of that PyBoard module. Okay. Well, we saw what we were using so far. We had LED, right? So I could type that and it would turn my LED on, right? I could turn it off, same way, okay? It will also auto-complete variables for you. So I could do if I have to define some variable by some long variable name, and this is why that long variable names are not such a pain as they seem, I can start typing that and hit tab, and it will automatically complete it for me. Atom will do that for you as well. Should automatically complete function names and variable names for you. Okay, so you can start typing your variables and tab, and it will autocomplete. Yes?
So does Atom have a function to tab to the end of parentheses bracket? Now it opens parentheses and then puts you in the middle?
I think it's buried in there somewhere, but I don't know for sure, actually. So the tab completion can be pretty helpful, right? If there's more than one option, it gives you a bunch of them. If there's only one option, it gives you some information, okay? So there's for a few different libraries and get the things, okay? Just going to hold off on that. Well, let's see. We got minutes. Let's hold off on that exercise. Gonna make sure we saw all that. Okay, we saw one. You have four LEDs on your board. You have red, green, yellow, and blue. Or 1, 2, 3, 4. And basically they all follow the same pattern as we've already seen with the red one. You can turn it off, you can turn it on, you can toggle it. Okay. The yellow and blue LEDs also have this extra method called intensity, which lets you basically cycle how bright it is. Right? So by calling that intensity and passing to that intensity function a value between 0 and 255, you can set how bright it is. Okay. So the blue LED, for example, we can set it to a variety of different intensities and different brightnesses, basically, as a result. Okay. So here's a piece of code that does that. How can we improve this piece of code? That's going to improve how you write code. I'm talking about the code itself. How do we know, say we wrote this, but hey, my blue LED is not coming on. How do we get any idea what's going on?
Read line by line.
I also can add some print statements to let me know where I'm at in my code. So this is why that print statement becomes kind of really useful in figuring out what's happening in your code. Is along the way here, we're printing stuff out to the REPL to let ourselves know where the code is at in its process. Okay? So each step along the way, we're letting ourselves know what's happening. And if we're still getting the print statements, but the LED's not turning on, we would know the problems with the LED piece of the code. Right? If we don't get the print statements at all, we know there's a much bigger problem because that piece of code as a whole block is not getting run. Right? So having these print statements, let yourself know what's happening. There's no need to just guess. Okay? Give yourself information to do the debugging with. Okay. There's also a button. The button has a switch object. So like the LEDs, it's just PYB as part of that PYB library, dot switch, capital S, parentheses. And we can figure out the button on your board, it's called user, USR. You can get the status of that button by checking this variable. Okay? So it looks something like this to be able to read that button. Okay? So anytime you call this function, if you write this guy, it's going to give you true if the button's pressed and false if it's not. How could you use that button in terms of your final project, maybe? You could maybe have it kind of wired up to something. Yeah, we're going to have some external buttons. They're probably better for that. You have an onboard button. Right, so it could be maybe don't do anything. This is my final check. Yes, we're ready to go. Press the button. Something like that. Okay. Okay. So some code to keep running the button forever and ever might look like this. What I want to do now, in our last 15 minutes or so, let's go back to I think we got it. Let's see. An exercise. So what we want to do is write a short script. You can start a brand new main.py for this. And what we want to do is print out to the REPL from your main.py, the odd numbers between 1 and 27. Okay? So my hint here is, hey, a for loop is probably a pretty good way to do this. Okay? So I'm going to leave, and I'll bounce around. Those of you that are having trouble with LEDs, I can help with that. Those of you that got the LED stuff to work, here's an exercise for you. Okay? For loop is one way to do it. There's a bunch of other ways. So let's try to do that. Those of you that got LEDs working. Okay. Yeah. And I'll bounce around. Okay, heads up. We're getting close to the end of our time. I want to make a few points before we take off. Who wrote code for the first time today? Good number of you guys. Okay, that's cool. That's good. You're becoming a modern mechanical engineer. I think the thing to remember if you're getting started at this is remember you didn't walk into a calc class knowing calculus. Okay, it took a little bit of work, took you going home and studying it a little bit, right? You didn't walk into Hibbler's statics class knowing statics. Right? You had to spend some time studying it and understanding it and working through it. This coding stuff is the same way. Okay, it's going to take you spending a little bit of time with it and doing problems and going home and working through these examples as kind of your homework. And figuring it out. Okay, you're not just gonna. People aren't just born knowing this stuff, right? It's learned. It's a learned skill. And I guarantee it. That every one of you guys, if you made it through physics and you made it through static and you made it through calc, you can learn how to write MicroPython code. Okay, I'm not promising it'll be effort free. It will take some effort on your part to learn it, but it is a learnable skill. Okay, and I think it is a super important part of being a modern mechanical engineer to have some foundational baseline understanding of this stuff. Right, we do a lot more than just design gears and stuff now. Okay, And even if you are just designing gears, you're probably going to be talking to a guy that is writing code or a girl that is writing code. So you need to have that foundational knowledge. That's what we're trying to help you build. Okay. So those of you who wrote code for the first time, good job. Congratulations. You're on your way. Just keep working at it. Try not to get frustrated. It's a learnable skill. Okay. Just like any other kind of learnable skill is calc, physics, whatever. Okay. Don't feel like you have to memorize all the syntax. Have the libraries open while you're working on your code. Look stuff up. Okay. But again, it is going to take a little bit of effort on your part working through these examples. Just if you only see this stuff when we're in class, you're not going to understand it. Just like if you only did calculus when you were in calc class, that wouldn't have been enough to learn it. Okay. If you only did statics in statics class, that wouldn't have been enough to learn it. Same thing here. Okay. Yes?
The library you're talking about, that's on GitHub, right?
The library of... So there's plenty of example code that we'll be working... Listen up, guys. There's plenty of example code that we'll be working through over the next couple weeks available on the GitHub that's linked from the class page, including some of the simple examples that are here. The notes from today were already up, PDF before class today. I'll add the audio when I get back to my office, if that's helpful. But yeah, there's plenty of help out there, basically. Right. Question, yes? How do I, who? So the question was, how do I force stop a script? If your script, if you open the REPL, and your code might be stuck in some kind of loop or waiting for some input, if you control C, it will break that and bring you back out to those greater than signs. So control C will break. One other special sequence. Other questions? Okay, if you had issues today, you didn't get through stuff, strongly suggest go away and try to figure it out on your own. If you have questions, though, between now and Thursday about what we worked on today, bounce me emails, come see me. I can help you get rolling, and then we'll be back up to speed on Thursday. All right, so we'll be doing kind of the same thing over the next couple lectures. Thanks.